for flushing toilets 10 times, 15 times.
Impressive.
As opposed to once.
Welcome to the UPHCA Pipeline Podcast, where issues and concerns, legislative news, and anything and everything about the plumbing and HVAC industry and trade will be discussed. Guests will provide insight into who they are and their role in the industry. We're excited to offer this service to our trade and industry. Our guest today is John Walker. He's the owner and president of CPI Chaparral Plumbing.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. I sure appreciate you doing this. It's been a long time since we spoke. John, tell me, you've been in the industry for how long?
This is my 54th year. I actually worked out in the field till I was like 54. And then after that, I've been in the office since. I'm still active. I do not all the bidding, but I do half of the bidding and the billing. So I'm still working 20, 25 hours a month.
Well, good. Excellent. So you're currently back in, what is it, South Carolina with your family?
Well, I'm in North Carolina.
I'm recuperating
from my surgery. All the guys out there, pay attention to your safety stuff and how you lift and things. I always had help when I was lifting, but with the scoliosis and that in my back after all that work, I've had three surgeries. And now I can still hardly walk, but got another one scheduled for the 14th of December, higher up the food chain, so hopefully this guy's better and I'll be able to get back to normal.
Well, we look forward to that. John, you were one of the strong supporters when the UPHCA first started and have been a great supporter ever since. Tell us a little bit about what you see in the industry that has changed since you first started.
Well, when I first started, we didn't have the association. All that came about quite a ways down my career. Kevin Flannery and Kevin Parkdahl and a couple of other guys and got together, invited us all out, and we got together. So I was in the founding second bunch, and I think I was the third president. I'm not positive. But what changed mainly is that when I first started, they were just barely ending tie seal, cast iron with hubs, and just barely getting started with ABS. And then from there, obviously, it changed a bunch. The politics changed. And then from that point, I moved here to Utah. I think it was in 80. So, you know, it's been a long time. But the industry has changed. The materials we use, like PEX, we didn't have any kind of PEX. That's the first go-around of PEX was pretty bad. It cost all those plastic fittings, cost a bunch of people's insurance, a ton of money. But we never did get into that. We did mostly commercial billing, so fun to that. But the biggest thing I see is that the politicians are trying to act like they're plumbers and know what's best and keep changing the licensing and those kind of things. So that's the biggest change I see.
Well, you know, you bring up a great point. I was in a business and labor interim committee meeting yesterday. I was listening in, and they were talking about some other licensing of another group of people. But boy, you can get a feel just listening to that conversation of how licensing is really one of their hot topics. We definitely have some things to have to watch and look to in the future. Tell me, your company, is it mostly commercial, residential? What type of work that you do?
We do 98% probably of commercial, bigger, heavy commercial, industrial, and that sort of thing. We do anything commercial, like stores and strip malls, anything commercial. We did go try to do some residential, and we got into it pretty heavy, but I think you have to have the mindset, and we didn't have the production mindset. To me, we're not going to let our guys just do one thing throughout their whole career and probably their whole life. Our guys are trained to do everything. So we've done a lot of houses. We did a bunch of habitat houses just so the guys could have some housing experience, the ones that work for us a long time. But recently, in the last 4 or 5 years, the only residential or service we do is, you know, for our friends and neighbors and stuff we can't get out of. So it's mostly commercial.
You know, our economy is, I think, changing compared to what it has been in the last so many years. Do you see some hiccups coming? Are commercial still strong in this state?
Well, we certainly haven't had too much problem getting work. We've been raising our prices. You know, the supply and demand mantra works pretty good. So as we have too many targets to hit for things to bid, the price goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So a while back, we decided we were going to bid more and raise our prices, bid more often and have more of a higher markup and those sorts of things. And we'd probably get the same amount of work in volume-wise. And that's worked pretty good. There's a lot of work out there in commercial, those kind of things, some of these giant buildings and stuff. But that's kind of slowed down. People are getting a little worried about the economy. But on the other hand, Utah was always lagging when it came to suffering from, you know, the recessions and those sort of things, just by the virtue of, I don't know if they're behind a little, the curve of what's needed. I know they're way behind on housing, but provide the same thing in housing. The inland port, I know a lot of people get upset about that, but that's a great idea, which I didn't know. There's inland ports everywhere, and all it is just a hub for business to work from. For the longest time, everything hubbed out of Denver, and they drive over here with it, and finally somebody decided, why don't we hub out of Utah? And since then, it's kind of been going crazy.
Very good. So tell us a little bit about yourself. What type of things have you enjoyed doing? Trips you've made, you remember well, that's something that you appreciate that you did. Tell us a little bit about what your background, what you've enjoyed doing personally.
Well, I've got the plumber build, you know, short and squatty. I played a lot of baseball. I always had a lot of fun with that. So what I did was I sponsored a team for 20 years, so they had to let me play. So
that's the way.
I did that. My wife and I have traveled all over the United States, and we've been to Europe and Caribbean and all that kind of stuff, but we travel mostly in the United States. My little dilemma with my back is kind of curtailed by a little bit, but getting better. So fall is my favorite time of year. I think in my retirement, I'm practicing to be retired, even though I still, like I said, work 25 hours or so a week at Chaparral, but I fancy myself as a writer. I have a book that I've finished. I mean, I've got 4 or 5 quasi books done, but I have one finished that I haven't actually started to put it out yet. My daughter, professional writer, she has 2 books published. First one is called Dietland, and the second one that's out right now is The Cherry Bombers. And so I like to think I got her light going with that, but my story is kind of in the vein of Craig Johnson and Hillerman. I like to read, but I'm not a very good reader, so I like to make it fast and quick. So if anybody would like to read it, just let me know. I'll send you a copy.
But oh, that's cool.
Other than that, I've got me a little shop in my house here, and I like to tinker out there. And what I'd like to do is teach people like me how to read. It's amazing how many men, and probably a lot of women too, who can't read at any age. And to me, that is horrible. I've been so many wonderful, exciting places all over the universe just because I can read and was pushed to read. That's one of my goals. I haven't quite got there yet, but that's something I want to do. And the other thing, too, that I'm quite proud of is probably done 10, 15 habitat houses. And I don't know if anybody, you guys are familiar with them, but they do sweat labor. They put the stuff in, they earn it. To me, when I was a kid and our family fell apart, one of the most important parts to me was we actually had a home, a house to be in.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't actually given any of my guys money for towards a house, but most of them have houses, and it's the stability and the ability to keep working and the encouragement and stuff. I'm very proud of that as well.
Very good. I appreciate that. And I was not aware that you were an author. That's an interesting aspect of John Walker. That's great.
It is. Well, I've always been that way, but never got that far. Now I've finished one. It's a 3-part thing. I've got the one completely finished, polished. And I'll have my daughter's going to help me find a publisher. Either they'll tell me to go jump in the river. In that case, I'll publish it on Amazon.
There you go.
But one way or the other, I'll get it out there. I enjoy it. It don't matter if anybody reads it, but I have a good time doing it. So
John, we're going through some interesting political times in our country, and I don't want to get into a big issue there, but what concerns do you have for our country and then maybe even into our industry?
Well, I mean, for the industry, I think that the politicians up in Salt Lake think they know more about plumbing and all that kind of stuff. And they're trying to make it more libertarian. I'm more of a bend toward libertarian than I am most other things. I used to fancy myself as a Republican, but they've kind of gone so far whack job that I'm registered as independent. I think that the party has kind of lost its way. I mean, a lot of people think it's going great and working good, but when the country's closely divided, I think what it means is the people are tired of your crap. You need to straighten up and start working together on things. It doesn't make any difference if you're Democrat, Republican, independent, whatever. I am an American, first and foremost. I remember when I was a kid, I was in drafting class. Of course, we were all young, and we lived near Marine Base. We had this kid named Kowalski, and he was obviously Japanese of a sort, Amerasian, I guess. But anyway, somebody asked me what he was, and looked at him strangely, and said, I'm an American. At a young age, I always thought that was the important part. Either you're American, you're not a Utahn, you're not a North Carolinian, you're not anything. If you're that, rather than American first, then you shouldn't be in politics, especially on the national level. And I think a lot of people have confused the fact that, you know, it's party first, it's this, that first, and kind of a cult personality. That's why I switched. If you can't think on your own and you have to be told, and if you do vote a certain way and then everybody gets ticked off at you and throws you out, that's not the party I'm in. So there's a lot of things going on, but I don't think it's horrible. America is fabulous. One thing I'd like to mention, I'm also kind of a historian, is that anybody who follows World War II or any of that kind of stuff, and they see what's going on in Ukraine and Russia, are no different than 1938 when Hitler started taking over the Sudetenland, the Rhineland, and those kind of things. If somebody would have stopped him, World War II would have been a non-event, or at least not near as catastrophic. So I think our support of them, the Ukrainians, to throw them off, the Russians, and stop them in their track is very, very, very important. If you don't know your history, it's going to come back and bite you in the butt.
Yeah, the old saying, history repeats itself. Very true.
Yep.
Where are you from originally? Where were you born and raised?
I was born in Denver and raised there till third grade. Then we moved to Los Angeles. My dad and every other soldier or whatever went through California in the 40s, and all of them wanted to go there. That's where we went. So I grew up the rest of the way in Norwalk till 10th grade, and then went to 29 Palms, which is kind of a backwater. It's got the biggest Marine base there. Maybe we had nothing to do with the Marine base, but my wife did. She's a Marine brat. But that's where I grew up in L.A., played ball every chance I got. My family kind of split up when we were in 9th, 10th grade, no matter what you think, that affects you. So, But anyway, that's where I went to school, Norwalk and 29 Palms.
And what made you decide to get into the trades, the plumbing trade?
Well, first I started off at the supply house. I don't know if anybody remembers Anstan or American Standard. Basically, that was our supply arm. I did that for a couple, 3 years, and then I got robbed to A&A Plumbing, and then that evolved into Spa Plumbing. And from there, we moved up to Salt Lake, and I worked for Burke's for a while, and then started Chaparral. And so what got me into it was in the industry. I knew everybody, and a good way to make money, and so that's what we did. I moved into that. My wife says I probably ruined my body and should have moved to something else, but I had a good career. I'm very happy with how it ended up and how it is working now.
So did you go through your apprenticeship here in Utah?
No, I went through the union in Riverside, California.
Oh, okay, all right.
I kept changing things. I first started as a trainee. I did that for a couple of years because they wouldn't let you in. They were trying to reduce their numbers so they could, you know, I think they were trying to create a labor shortage, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, when I did get in, they knocked off a year and a half. And so I turned out from there. They didn't have a test, nothing as formal as the way Utah did it. But I came up, and I can't remember who the president of the committee was then. But anyway, I took the test and everything. I had somebody buy me a sheet of lead. I made lead flashings in my garage, practiced all that. And then all these young whippersnappers don't have to do that anymore. So I come up, took the test, and then we moved up and wasn't here very long. We started, after I got done working for Gene Burke's for a while, we started Chaparral Plumbing. And that's going on, that's our 45th year of Chaparral.
Oh, that's great. It just shows the reason why America is such a great country, is brings people up from the bootstraps. That's a great story. I appreciate you sharing that with us. You served on the Plumbing Licensing Board for a while. Did you gain any insight there as you served on that board?
Well, you know, first, before that happened, we worked on getting the master plumber thing through. It really opened my eyes how legislation works and how some of these people can really be, in my words, a bozo. And it's kind of what they're doing now is some of these guys think they know better than everybody else, and they're going to shove it down your throat rather than listening to the professionals. But on the other hand, on that committee, we've had some interesting things. A lot of times we had a couple of people trying to get their license reinstated. I don't know that plumbing, a lot of people don't see it as a license that should be morally tainted, but, you know, it's a place to work. You're supposed to work and do these things. But we had some interesting ones where, you know, one guy, one trying to get back his license, that had committed a pretty brutal rape 5 or 6 years before that, after he got out of jail, he was trying to get back. And he tried to put his life together, but it was still there, so you had to judge that. And then you have other guys, a lot of DUIs and things like that. But the biggest thing, I don't think we had the master thing was through. We didn't have, if I was on, I was only on 4 years, but that nothing earth-shattering that we did or anything. We just kept things moving forward. But it was very interesting. Got to learn, get to know other people outside of you know, your little circle. That's what's good about the UPHCA, is I was stuck in my little circle, and it wasn't very big. And as I got more involved with that, my circle got bigger and bigger and bigger. And at that point, I knew quite a few people, which, you know, is always helpful. When I was a kid, I wouldn't say three words to anybody. I married Joyce, and you know, she's really outgoing, so I got a little better, a little better. Now, I can work a room like as good as any politician on the planet, so I've changed a ton, so that's what helps.
Very good. As we've mentioned, the UPHCA, that you were one of the past presidents and so forth and been involved over the years. The challenge that I see is the new guys coming up, taking over their father's place or a new company, or the newer generation struggles with understanding why a group of plumbers in an association has some value. What would you say if you were talking to one of these young whippersnappers and encouraging them to become involved in a group of professionals?
Well, first of all, their strength in numbers. I tell them that, you know, like you and your friends, you know, like to do certain things. You know, you have like thought and like things. You may not agree on politics, you may not agree on women, and you may not agree about a lot of things. But if you're going to be a plumber and you're going to be part of the industry, that is a living, heart-beating organization, if you're in it or not. So either you have a part in it and say, you can just sit in the back and don't do anything. And I think most of the time, probably the meetings are online more than they were when we started. But it doesn't matter. You can still be a part and throw your time in. And getting to know other people is very valuable. I always tell my apprentices, you know, the more you know, the better you are at the many different things you do, the more you're going to work. Kind of the same thing. If you know everybody or a number of people, and you get to, I mean, they're your competitors, you don't have to be upset at them. You don't have to hold rocks. You get to know them, figure them out, you know, then you can work together for the betterment of everyone. I always used to say, the union said they, when I was a kid, I mean, anybody who knows what all thread is, we had to cut our own all thread off of cold stock, because the union said that was a labor-saving thing. You couldn't do it. Well, hooey with that, because the more efficient and the better you control costs and build buildings at a better cost, the more they're going to build and the more people work. And the more people work, the better it is for everyone. But I would tell them that their strength in numbers, and the important thing is we all work together. We're all a brotherhood, a sisterhood, not too many sisters, but you get to know people and it makes you stronger.
Very good. I appreciate that very much. Well, do you have any last words of wisdom that you feel like you'd like to share with the industry, with members, or with younger generations, something that you wanted to share with us today?
Well, I want to tell everybody, especially younger guys, to think safe, be safe, and do safe. Chaparral has a very comprehensive safety thing, and we're very interested in making sure our guys are safe. Under the ground, we're doing trenches on lifts or anything else. We have a set program. We like to think that we're all working together to make a living and go home safe and those kind of things. Just remember me, I try to be safe my whole entire career, and yet I've got this tremendous back problem that, you know, it's very troubling. I tell all the guys when we have our safety meetings, is these things are cumulative. You jump out of a truck or jump into a ditch or you do something that's, you know, not quite safe. I can't tell you how many times I almost got killed thinking back about it. I mean, nothing really horrible in that sense, but standing in water when they hit an electric power line, you know, pop and your ears ring for 4 hours. And I'm standing in the water with boots on and all kinds of stuff like that. So take safety important. And as far as the UPHCA, personally want to thank you, Dave. You've made it come a long way. I know at the first we had, when Jeff Patterson was there, he was, a lot of people didn't like him, thought he had some, you know, he'd done some things that weren't quite right, but I never did. I thought he was a very good salesman, way better salesman than I would be, and a networker and those kind of things. But from that, built into a very, very good and dynamic creature, a living organism, and you've been at the heart of that for quite a while now. I appreciate it, and thank you.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate it very much. And I've thoroughly enjoyed visiting with you. I see you in a different light now, being an author and your background and so forth. Now, in your life, who do you think has been the most influential person in your life?
Well, probably my wife. She and I split apart, and the love of my life, and been married, what, 52, 53 years now. We've had our troubles and problems, but she is the most important, the most influential. outside of that realm, you know, I read a lot. And so, you know, a lot of history. And so anybody like Abraham Lincoln and those kind of guys, I mean, I get a lot out of those. But I do read a lot. Marine Corps says if you're going to go anywhere in the Marine Corps, you could read hundreds of books. That's not why I read them. But when I read Mathis's book, actually, he read so many books and that sort of thing. I think that's what's influenced me, is the smattering across a big bunch of people.
All right. Well, thank you very much for listening to the UPHCA Pipeline Podcast. We would appreciate your feedback and suggestions of people you'd like to hear from on future podcasts. Finally, I just wanted to share one thought with you. Do not go where the path may lead. Go instead where there is no path and leave a trail. And that's from Ralph Emerson. So thank you very much and have a great day.
Flushing toilets 10 times, 15 times.
Impressive.
As opposed to once.